and welcome back to Area 51 and a Half, where we talk about all things science fiction, fantasy, horror, and pop culture. As always, I am your host, Spooky Uncle John. With me, as always, are my Millennial Falcons, my producer,
Snyderman 501, Nick Snyder,
and our Technomage,
Ren, a.k.a. Pyrolily.
Nick, remind our aliens how they can get a hold of us.
Oh, they can find us on social media. That is Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at the Area 51H. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube by searching for Area 51 and a Half. You can also check out our Patreon for all sorts of exclusive goodies and a shout-out during our podcast, also by searching for Area 51 and a Half. And, of course, don't forget to check out our survey, which we will link in the description of this episode.
So, like, seriously, if anybody wants to get a hold of us, they have a plethora of options.
At this point, I can give you my address. You can come see me directly. But anyway.
Bad life choice.
No, I'm not doing that. Just a reminder, every Monday night, Area 51 and a Half will be hosting Games Night at Danny's from 4 to close right here in St. Thomas, Ontario. Everybody's talking about it. We've had some really great turnout, and we're excited to see our aliens or anyone else who comes out for the night. Entry is, of course, free with purchase of food, but that's not all. Half-price nachos and mozza sticks are a go. So come on out for a night of fun and frivolity and join us for a game. St. Thomas Danny's is located at 417 Wellington Street at the Elgin Center. So, John, last week you went on an adventure, didn't you?
Yeah, right. I went to visit my Aunt Lois in Coburg.
Seriously?
And?
No.
Oh, and! Yeah, I also saw Matt and Crystal, who live in Toronto.
And?
Well?
Oh, you guys want the skinny on me going to be a background extra in Guillermo del Toro's movie Prodigal Father.
Yes.
Okay, well, what is it that you would like to know?
Basically, everything that you can tell us that doesn't fall under the NDA.
So nothing, no. No, listen, the first thing I want to say is I really don't want people, like, I will be livid when I hear people talk about Hollywood being like a fluff machine, or like, it is darn hard work making a movie. And I don't think people understand that. They just see the glitz and the glamour of it. But it is really, really hard work, because the set that we were on, it was a lecture hall. They take apart the set and rebuild it to accommodate the camera coming in to get certain angles and certain shots on the regular. The movie industry employs more than just the actors and the directors, right? There's all kinds of crew. There's craft services, which is the food services. There's the guys that transport you from the base camp to the studio, drivers, like secretaries, janitorial people.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's not just the stars, right? There's, this is a huge industry that employs a lot of people, and some of them through contract work. You get up at dumb o'clock. Does this hour even exist in the morning to be there on time? I had to get up. See, Matt and Crystal live like a 10-minute drive from the studio, which is why I stayed with them. Yeah. And I thank them so much for letting me do that, because otherwise, oh my gosh. So sometimes I was there before the crew. But having said that, I'm getting up at 4 or 5 in the morning to get there for my call, which is like 4:42 or 5:42. And then you don't get done. You don't wrap for the day until sometime after 9 o'clock at night.
Ugh.
Yeah. It all for minimum wage. But you're not doing this project for the money, obviously. I mean, you're doing it for the background work. So I can't tell you a lot of specifics, but I'll try and tell you some really interesting things. One of the rules is you don't talk to the stars. Now, there's a reason for that. One, they're at work. You are at work.
Yeah.
It is supposed to be a professional environment. If they talk to you, fine. You can talk to them. That's fine. But you're not supposed to be in their space, and you're not supposed to go up and ask them for autographs or anything like that. Because, one, they're reviewing their lines. They are trying to stay in character. They're doing all kinds of things because they are at work.
Right.
It's not like, you know, it's the red carpet where you're just like, hey, oh, I love you. Oh, can I get an autograph? You know, yeah, sure. It's not like you're running into them at, like, Menchie's or McDonald's. It is work. You are supposed to be professional. Having said that, I found myself one day, I was a little turned around, and I turned, and there's Christoph Waltz standing there. And I'm just like, there's so many things I would have loved to have said to him, but I sit there and go, no. So there was this regard where our eyes met, and there was a nod, and I'm like, peace out. I will leave you to your Christoph Waltzness. So Thursday was really, it's surreal because I'm on a movie set. You know, like I've done background before, but it's always been location where the costume person sits and goes, okay, so we need you to bring the following items with you. It's like, okay. It's like, and one I did here in town, Mr. Headmistress, years ago.
Yeah.
I remember the costume lady, she's like, oh my God, you have like so much black. Because I was supposed to be wearing a suit with an overcoat and all this kind of stuff, just to do background. It's like, oh, so much black. I was like, have you nothing else? I'm like, I'm just an average working stiff. How many overcoats do you think I have at home? You know, it's like, I've got this one. Zhuzh it up however you need to. But so this was a period piece. So the only thing I had to bring of my own was a white undershirt and black socks.
Yay!
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really a great experience because this is professionalism. You get to know the crew. I made sure I knew everybody's name and a little bit about them when I interacted with them. There's a reason you do this. One, to your point, Nick, it's professional.
Yes.
Two, as I quickly discovered, they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we're getting undressed for the day, and there is a milieu of men, because it's all men in this background scene, I would hear them go up to get their sheets for the day, which gets submitted, and that's how you get paid and all that kind of stuff. And I would hear, what was your name again? Okay, see, do you have his sheet, friends? I go up after learning Kaylee's name, after learning a little bit about Kaylee, and she's like, oh, John, here's your sheet. Boom, one and done, I'm out. Beautiful girl, wonderful. Everybody was wonderful. It's such a trip to sit there in makeup and have like hair and a hairpiece and all this kind of stuff, which I would love to show pictures, but I can't because we're not even allowed to take them.
Mm-hmm.
So I have nothing to show you. Friday. So after just being like completely in a surreal thing where I'm like, oh my God, there's Oscar Isaac. There's Guillermo del Toro. There's Christoph Waltz sitting right there. He had no lines in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the funny thing. Other than the paycheck, other than the treatment, we were exactly the same. Sitting there in these characters in an uncomfortable, hot, very hot set. And I'm just like, this is awesome. This is so awesome. But it's so surreal because you're sitting there going, I'm in the same room as Guillermo del Toro, Oscar Isaac, and Christoph Waltz. So you have to get past that.
Mm-hmm.
Friday. Friday was the worst day for us playing the teachers. Because we sat in holding all day long.
What is holding?
Holding is where you are corralled until you are needed.
Oh, okay.
That's why it's called holding.
Yep, okay.
All day long. And we're looking at our watches. For those of you in the younger generation, a watch is a time device that you wear on your wrist.
It's also known as a Fitbit now.
If you want to see what time it is. So we said, and you know, lunch rolls around and lunch is late. It's like 3 o'clock, but they have like substantials is what they're called. And you can go to a craft service truck whenever you want. And we're like, okay. So then we get in to do a scene, which didn't last long, and we were out again.
Aww.
So when you're in holding, are you allowed to converse with each other?
Oh, sure.
Did people bring stuff to do while they're holding?
Yeah, you bring a book, talk to your fellow BGs, whatever, right? And but, you know, like, it was so, we're just like, oh my God, because you get tired just sitting there. Mm-hmm. It's not comfortable. Like, you're basically on folding chairs. You know, so.
And you can't, yeah.
Yeah, and you're wandering around. Like, I'm not complaining because it's like, where else would I rather be? But, you know, it's just like, I don't know what happened. Mm-hmm. But when we're there, Mia Goth walked in and her outfit. She wasn't supposed to be there.
No.
She wasn't in the scene. So I don't know if she was there for a fitting or what. But what was charming about that is, one, I got to see Mia Goth. Yay. Mm-hmm. And two, listening to the young guys playing the students back in holding. It was like,
oh my God, she's so beautiful.
Like, it's so funny listening to them. I'm like, settle down, boys. I'm sure you've seen women before.
Are you sure?
Yeah. So, you know, then I yeet myself to my Aunt Lois's in Coburg for the weekend because they don't work on the weekends, and come back Monday. Now, here's the thing. This is what I talked earlier about, it being hard work. So, if you will note, at the Oscars, Christoph Waltz came out with other Best Supporting Actor winners to present the Best Supporting Actor Oscars.
Right.
Christoph Waltz yeeted himself to L.A., did the thing, yeeted himself back to Toronto to be there Monday morning to sit there and not have lines.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like, that is the professional world. It is not the glitz and glamour that you think it is. It is hard, hard work. So this is the moment that we're waiting for, guys. This is what I think you really want to know. Monday rolls around.
Right.
Last day of shooting. I take my place. I'm sitting in my place. Guillermo del Toro comes around. I'm third row up. Judges are there. Judges front row, the actors that actually have the lines. Featured background performer judges in the second row, me and who's beside me. Guillermo del Toro points at me and says, I want you to do this. In other words, get up and storm out of the lecture.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't think that's anything. I don't think that's a non-disclosure thing. Yeah. I think I'm okay with that. And I'm sitting there going, Guillermo del Toro picked me personally to do this thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, so I had to, outwardly, I'm just like, oh, whatever you want, sir. You know, professionally, I will, yes, whatever you need, I'm happy to do it. Inside, I'm like, holy crap. So he goes back to his directorial place and he sits there and he starts the scene and he starts directing. And then I hear him say, okay, John, this is what I want you to do. And I'm like, Guillermo del Toro just called me by name and is directing me. I am being directed by a big time Oscar winning Hollywood producer. Oh, I am not going to mess this up. I cannot tell you the joy that this brings me, because this is something that I had wanted to do my entire life, but circumstances being what they were, I did not pursue it. Looked after my family, looked after whatever things, but I've acted and I've taken whatever opportunity I can. So, I mean, to actually, whether this makes the final cut or not, I don't care. Guillermo del Toro, in that moment, I'm sure he doesn't know it now, but in that moment, knew my name and directed me. So now the big joke is, amongst all of our acting friends, is like, if a director gives me a hard time in the future, I'll just be like, listen.
Del Toro told me that I could do it.
I was directed by Guillermo del Toro. So, no, I would never do that because I would be snotty. But, oh my gosh, it was just so. I have to do this over and over and over and over again. And the fun thing is, like, I don't care, because I'm like, whatever Guillermo wants, I will provide.
You will leave that room 50 times.
How many times did you have to do it?
I lost count, but my thighs did not. Because that was sort of the downside of it, was the fact that it's like, I have no warm-up. I did not warm up. I wasn't planning.
Yep, you just...
I thought I would be sitting there shaking my fist and saying that what Frankenstein's doing is blasphemy. And Oscar Isaac is reacting to all of this. So at the moment where I am, because he now knows that I'm going to get up and storm off, he's looking at me. And so technically I'm acting to
you
and
are.
With Oscar Isaac.
Yeah.
Sort of. Ooh. Sort of. Because everyone's yelling the thing, you know. And I'm just like, this is so cool. This is amazingly cool. But the part that wasn't cool was just like my fellow teacher's like, dudes, let me through. Guillermo wants me to do this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Gotta get out of my way and let me do the thing. So, you know, I'm, and the guy next to me, Kevin, he was like my background holding buddy. I enjoyed hanging out with Kevin. He says to me, he's like, oh, yeah, you were really aggressive at that one point. You really pushed against me there. And I'm just like, yeah, because you weren't getting out of my way, Kev.
if they don't move, you gotta go.
I gotta get through here, and it's a very tight corridor. Mm-hmm. And then I had to come back, and of course, all the guys forgot that I just stormed out. So they start setting. I'm like, come on, get up. And I finally figured out, instead of going through the front of them, everybody just stay standing, and I'll walk across the bench.
You know? Yeah.
So that was so much fun doing that until I realized as they do this other scene, which came after that, and I'm sitting there in my place and I went, oh, I can't be here. I just stormed out.
Mm-hmm.
Continuity.
Not your job.
No, not my job. But I sat there and went, no, I can't let Guillermo down. Mm-hmm. I have to move. I have to get out of here. So I left and went over to an out of camera spot and watched the rest of it happen. But highlight, it's not even my highlight. Highlight of that day, because it was Oscar Isaac's birthday over the weekend.
Oh!
His family was there. So his wife and his two little boys. Mm-hmm. And they come in, and watching them just be in awe of everything. And the puppeteers are there with the corpse puppet. Mm-hmm. And watching professional puppeteers who do television shows and movies and everything just improv their life with this corpse puppet, joking with the little boys, talking with the little boys, was just like,
oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, and you hear this collective as they come in and they're you hear this collective,
aww,
from everybody.
Oh, man.
I mean, so it's moments like that that are just so beautiful to experience, you know? And you can't fan out. You have to be professional. But it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. So, I mean, like, this is just something that I'm not bragging about it. It happened. It's great. But, oh, my God, I've waited my whole life to be directed by a Hollywood director in a big film. Even though it's background, it's still the thing.
But, so when the credits roll, I've seen some scenes where it's like, man that storms out. It could be man that storms out.
I could be disgruntled teacher. You never
yeah,
know.
Yeah, like you could, or you could just be professor. But I've seen somewhere it's like this little minute detail gets their own special thing.
Anything could happen. I'm not counting on it.
Your name, I imagine, will be in the credits.
Maybe,
unless
maybe
you signed
not.
A thing and said no.
Maybe not. I don't know. I know I'm not getting paid anymore.
Oh, well.
but that's not it. It's the. If that scene doesn't make it in, or if it's just a blur in the background, it's fine. It was the experience of it to sit there and go, you know what? I got a shot to do some acting here. So I improvised some lines. I don't think I can say the lines that I improv, but they were good. They were good because I was like, I have.
A lot of like, oh, no.
I have like one shot to come up with a really good line to yell at Oscar Isaac.
Mm-hmm.
And as everybody else is yelling. So, I mean, it's not going to be discernible, but it's like, you know, it's certainly going to be better than boo and like, no, no. So I came up with a really good. I suppose I can because it's not the script and you probably won't hear it.
I
don't know. I don't know how far the non-disclosure goes.
I would err.
Let's err on the side of caution, but I'll tell you guys after the show what I said.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
Yeah.
It was good. And I think that's where I think why Oscar Isaac kind of set it on me, because I think he heard the line. He's like, that's good. I think. Anyway, because it's hard to... He's a good actor. He's a chameleon.
Yeah.
Like, I have seen him now.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we all know him as Poe Dameron, right? But I've seen him in as Joseph in The Nativity with, and you wouldn't know it's the same guy. And then I've seen him as Moon Knight.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it's Poe Dameron. You wouldn't know it's Joseph. Yeah. And now I see him as Victor Frankenstein. I'm like, how many Oscar Isaacs are there, and which one do we pull out to, you know, put up? Because he's good.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. At some point, I think he will get that Oscar-nominated
performance. Oscar's going to get nominated for an Oscar?
Yeah, I think so. I really do think he will. But, you know, it's really interesting watching the end of the day, too. Because, again, it's a job and it's professional. And they all, like, go and they shake each other's hands. And it's really nice. And it was just a wonderful environment because Guillermo del Toro is just a jovial fellow, you know. But he also is a no-nonsense fellow. So, you know, it's like, but he has his assistant directors to tell you to shut the up. He doesn't have to do that. He's got his assistant directors to do that.
He's got people for that.
Yeah, he's got people for that. And it was, but he was so jovial and he was so good. And just watching him direct the crowd in such a fun way with hand gestures and everything else. And he called the students the young bohemians because they were, the scene is basically the students are like for it. They're like, yeah, this Victor guy's great. And the teachers are like, what are you doing? This is against God and we hate you. So it was really quite a fun dynamic that way. But just so hot because it's gaslit. And so there's this gaslight that's putting all the heat up, and I'm just like,
you guys are rolling.
We're wearing layers and layers of costumes, and of course the teacher's robes and all that kind of stuff, and I've got a hairpiece on. I'm just like, this is hot. And the only downside to that, because I'm sitting there going, I don't care, there's nowhere else I'd rather be for these 3 days. But the downside hits you when you go back to costuming to take off the costume. It's like, yes, this is like a high school locker room after a really early, hot football game. And I was like, yes, there's a scent that I had completely forgotten out of my psyche that is now back. But yeah, guys, it was so much fun.
Good.
So much fun. Even the hardship of it was fun. I didn't mind. For some reason, when you are doing something you love, you don't care that you have to get up at 4 or 5 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bitch in the moment, but
but
you don't
mind. I agree.
Well, the thing is, what was hard is because I'm staying at friends' homes, I'm trying to be very, very quiet and not interrupt them or wake them. You know, and trying to swip out the door and be, but I mean, like, it's so surreal watching the sunrise over the Toronto cityscape, because we're down the harbor front, so Toronto cityscape proper is over there, is surreal. It is so, it's a surreal city to begin with, but anyway, on that note, it is time for Nick's Pop Culture Roundup.
So, first thing I'm going to talk about this week is the upcoming fight between one Jake Paul and Iron Mike Tyson. Just let that sink in for a second. Now, Jake Paul, we all know who Jake Paul is. He's a YouTube star, all that stuff.
Know who Jake Paul is?
Well, I know who Jake Paul is. He's brother of Logan Paul. He's going to be fighting Mike Tyson. Now, Jake Paul has had his share of MMA and boxing matches before. He's taken on the likes of Tyron Woodley, Anderson Silva, Tommy Fury. He has a win-loss record of 9-1, 6 by KO. Pretty impressive. But dude, someone put a video of Mike Tyson training up on TikTok. If that is him training, Jake Paul's going to die a lot. Like, it's going to be a massacre.
Mike Tyson ate a person's ear, for God's sakes. I would not go up against him for all the money in the world. Like, how much of this is a stunt and how much of this is like a legit match?
It is an exhibition match.
Okay.
Now,
having said that, though, it's still a boxing match.
Exactly. And I've seen a lot of the chatter online about it. A lot of people are saying if Jake Paul comes out the winner on this, I'm sorry, Tyson threw the match.
Yeah.
There's no way Jake Paul is going to beat Mike Tyson. Not fairly, not properly.
But do you think Tyson might pull his punches a bit?
Oh, no. No.
He better not.
What I mean by pull a punch is like, would he hit somebody as hard as somebody else?
Here's my thing. We all think of Mike Tyson. A lot of us think of Mike Tyson as this funny sounding dude with a lisp that does weird cameos like in Hangover, and he had the Mike Tyson mystery cartoon. He is an utter animal in the ring. He's vicious, and he is out to hurt somebody when you're in the ring with him.
Yeah.
He's in it to win it, and I don't think Jake Paul's going to come out looking well after this.
Listen, this is no judgment on my part by any stretch of the imagination, but, I mean, tattoos, when a person gets them, I don't have any myself, but I understand that it's a little uncomfortable. This dude, you don't mess with dudes that have tattoos on their neck or face. Like, I just... I don't know if this is a good life choice on the part of Jake Paul.
I mean, at the end of the day, he'll win a lot of money, but at the same time, or he'll get a lot of money for
it. He'll need it for his hospitalization.
Exactly. Exactly. Next up, Street Sharks. Street Sharks are being re-released by Mattel for their 30th anniversary. I'm excited for that. They've released a new line of 6-inch figures of the original line featuring updated articulation, return to real feel skin. So it's got like this rubbery shark-like texture. It's really cool. The original series had that. It was cool. And if this line does well, we may see the return of all their nostalgia lines like Mighty Max. Now, my main thing is, will Vin Diesel be back to do the advertisements?
Let's hope so.
I hope so, yeah. I'm looking forward. I'm going to pick some of these up because I love Street Sharks when I was a kid.
That question that you just asked was, you know, not a question that I thought I'd have to answer when I woke up this morning. Will Vin Diesel be back to promote it?
Yeah. Yeah. Head shark. Anyway. no, okay. It's a little bit on that. So when they first released these toys back in the 90s, Vin Diesel did a series of videos when he was still not Vin Diesel, but Vincent, whatever, can't remember his real name, and he was just showcasing these toys, and they had these puppet ones, and he was like, he's hiding it behind his back, and then he just throws it in front of the camera, goes, head shark! It is the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
Everybody's got to start somewhere.
Everybody does. But yeah, that's cool to me. I'm really happy to see them come back. Speaking of coming back, Neve Campbell is back for Scream 7. After all of the kerfuffle regarding the cast prior, they've obviously thrown the money that they need to throw at Neve Campbell to bring her back.
But is Courtney Cox coming back?
Probably.
Don't ever kill Gale or Sydney. Just don't.
Well, they weren't supposed to kill Dewey, but here we are. Spoiler alert.
I'm still mad about that. Like, you know, Scream is not my favorite property. I've seen them all. I remember a couple of them. But when they killed Dewey, I was just so outraged.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. Is the Scream series itself a great series? No. The first movie's great, but, you know, at the end of the day, Dewey is a really good, likable character.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to, like, even though he was like a sad sack alcoholic in the sixth movie or in the fifth movie, I didn't want to see him get killed.
No, not by a long shot. No, Dewey, Sidney, and Gale are Scream.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
anyway.
So yeah, that.
I'll reserve judgment like I do with all of them until I see it, because I don't know. I don't know. At this point, I just don't know.
I certainly hope the next one has a bigger body count than the previous one, because I think only one of the protagonists got popped in the last one. That was a girl in the that was trying to cross on the ladder.
It was strange.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Making up for Dewey getting killed in the previous one, but not killing anyone else.
I just would like them to do a really, really good Scream movie like the first one.
The problem is how do you do... Because...
There's new tropes now, though.
I know there's new tropes, but at the end of the day, the Scream series has become a parody of itself.
Yeah.
Because it's making fun of these tropes, but it's following its own tropes that it itself has created.
Yeah.
So,
and without Wes Craven to sort of steer the ship, who knows?
Well, I mean, Wes Craven was there to steer the ship for 2, 3, and 4, and that didn't turn out well, so whatever.
Well, at some point, you're still the captain of the Minnow. I mean, as long as everybody's alive, doesn't matter that you're shipwrecked.
I mean, if I had to sit there and watch a 3-hour Scream movie, I'd like to get shipwrecked at that point.
So, speaking of Scream and Scream alum...
Uh-huh.
Friday night, I finally got a chance to watch Friday Night at Freddy's.
Right.
Or Five Nights at Freddy's, pardon me.
Five Nights at Freddy's.
Friday Night at Freddy's.
That's a different movie entirely.
Yeah, Five Nights at Freddy's. And look, it's not great, but it was fun. And it was kind of original in a way.
I'm curious to see what you thought about it, honestly, considering you don't know much about the video game.
The only thing I know about the video game is that it's very anxiety-inducing because of what you need to do in the game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know.
But you don't know any of the lore.
I never played it. I don't know any of the lore.
I'm curious about what you think about it.
Well, I think that they made a fairly decent horror movie, kind of horror movie light, because it's kind of leaned on that kiddie friendly kind of thing a little bit. But I'll tell you what just made me gleeful was the fact that for me, and I don't know if it happens in the video game or not, but it's like it had a Scooby-Doo ending where they unmask the person and it's freaking Shaggy.
That was the best.
I mean, it's like Matthew Lillard is synonymous with Shaggy. He's kind of replaced Casey Kasem at this point with the voice. Mm-hmm. But I was just like...
And he could have gotten away with it if it wasn't
was for those meddling kids. Yeah, and I'm just like, oh my God, this is... it was a decent horror movie. One of the other horror movies I saw this weekend was Imaginary.
Okay.
Again, not fantastic. But not bad.
Hmm.
Betty Buckley is a Broadway actress. She was in the original Cats. Chewed up the scenery. Completely chewed it up. And it was glorious. I mean, she and the little girl did a really good job. Hmm. And so what I like about it, the reason I'm sort of elevating these two movies a little bit, because they weren't done fantastic. But they're at least, what am I always complaining about, Nick? It was something new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It gave me something new. Speaking of getting something new, that's what we're going to talk about. Ghostbusters! Frozen Empire coming out soon!
I am stoked for this. I can't wait. I love Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters is one of my favorite movies of all time. And the fact that we're now getting these legacy sequels, I hate that term, but anyway. These legacy sequels, and we've got the original cast and a new cast in there, is really cool. I enjoy, we did the episode on Afterlife. I enjoyed Afterlife.
I recently rewatched it.
Yeah. And I really dig the additions to the cast. Like, Patton Oswalt's in this, and I don't know entirely how much he has to do in this film, but I love Patton Oswalt. I love Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
I'm really digging Carrie King.
Yeah, what I like about it is it seems like the band is back, not just to come in and play at the final,
final act. Yeah.
Yeah, the climax of the movie, but I think they're going to be in it all the way through.
Yeah,
I saw a trailer and I'm like, that is how you do a trailer. It was short. It was concise. It brought me in. Like, don't show me too much about the movie, but what do we have? Like, this is Ghostbusters 40th anniversary.
It is.
And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about Ghostbusters as a whole. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Ever since 1984?
Yeah, 84.
1984.
June of 84 is when the first movie released.
you can't say who you're going to call anymore without somebody going, Ghostbusters!
There was actually a time in middle school that this one kid was getting in trouble. And the teacher was like, and if you don't stop this, who am I going to call? And another kid from across the room goes, Ghostbusters!
That's hilarious.
It's like, the teacher was like, I'm going to call your parents, but no, Ghostbusters!
There's so much trivia surrounding the original Ghostbusters movie that just makes me smile. So, for example, the name Ghostbusters almost wasn't the name of the movie. So they had a rights issue with Universal because they owned the rights to a 1970s kids show.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
With the gorilla.
Yeah, I remember that and, piece of crap.
Yeah, and a couple guys from the F Troop TV series. And they didn't get the rights until like the 11th hour. Oh, like literally weeks before this movie premieres, they didn't get the rights to the name Ghostbusters. So they had other names set up like Ghost Smashers and Ghost Breakers. And what was the other one here? Hang on, let me just look at my notes. Ghost Stoppers.
Can you imagine that scene wouldn't go the same? The Ghostbusters, what do you want?
Ghost Stoppers, like, what do you want?
Ghost Smashers,
out of the three, Ghost Stoppers is probably the best
one. I don't like Ghost Smashers.
No, Ghost Smashers.
Smash. Pass.
But as it turns out, though, that's also the reason that the cartoon was called The Real Ghostbusters, because they didn't have the rights to use just Ghostbusters for a TV show.
Yeah.
And why there is another cartoon called the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, and you know, it's really kind of a very fascinating thing when you get into all of that, because I mean they were possibly gonna be sued by Harvey Comics because the ghost looked like Fatso.
Yeah, it did, didn't it? Yeah.
I always thought it was supposed to be
fair enough. I mean, it really
to
does
be honest,
look like Fatso.
I was like, look, Casper's brother.
Yeah. No, yeah. Yeah, yeah, poor Casper. Anyway, Casper is for another... Well, he is a ghost. I don't know.
Yeah, so, Casper's going to be celebrating his 80th anniversary at some point soon?
I just can't believe it's been 40 years, because, like, let me take you back. I mean, like, this is... Like, I'm 14 going on 50, you know? And I go to the Capitol Theater downtown with my friend Charlene, Chuck, real tomboy, to see Ghostbusters. Which was the big summer movie. I mean, they had the t-shirts, everything, right? And we just sat there in awe because we had not really seen anything like it. It was, I mean, casting back to the 1980s when you're like 14 years old. It was funny. It was irreverent. It was a little bit scary.
There is some soft horror. Like, I remember when I was a kid, this is one of those movies that I wore the VHS down.
Yeah.
I had, my parents bought me multiple copies of this movie because I just wore the VHS, like a couple different VHSs down. But one of the scenes that I could not watch until I was like a teenager was the scene where all the arms come out of the armchair. I didn't even know what that scene looked like until I was like 13 or 14 because I would keep covering my eyes.
Yeah. Well, that was Chuck and I, we like reached out to each other's hand. We're like, oh, you know, but now it's like nothing.
Yeah.
But at the time it was frightening. And, you know, and there's a certain sexuality involved in there too, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, and it's just like, it was just, I think you knew you were in for a ride in that opening sequence at the library.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the thing about all the Ghostbusters movies. And even the Ghostbusters video game, the one that came out in, I believe it was 2009, is that the opening scene, it really sets the tone for the rest of the story.
Right.
That scene with the librarian, the scene where Dana's buggy goes out into traffic and all that. It all sets the tone for the story.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a really rich property that I don't know if they expect. I mean, Ivan Reitman was a huge director at the time in the 80s, right? And I don't know if they expected it, because Bill Murray was a huge, huge star in the 80s. I mean, like, Dan Aykroyd was a huge star. It was just this whole idea of bringing in these people and Eddie Murphy was supposed to play the Ernie Hudson role.
Yeah.
But then turned it down.
He
wasn't in it long enough.
He turned it down to do Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's his... Beverly Hills Cop, he is the star of that movie. He doesn't have to share the...
In the original script, Winston is in it from the get-go. He's in it from the start. It wasn't until Eddie Murphy... it wasn't until Ernie Hudson was cast that they reduced the role because Ernie Hudson wasn't a big star.
Right.
So they reduced the role because it was him. And even he went on set and he's like, "Where's the rest of my script?"
Yeah. But you know what? It makes sense that the story that they came up with makes more sense to me. Having Ernie Hudson's character, like having him come in.
Yeah.
Towards the end, looking for a job. It just makes so much more sense.
Well, there were differences in the character that was supposed to be for Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, of course.
Like, he was a former Air Force sergeant who was also a demolitions expert or something like that. But all that got cut out.
Yeah. So. But the truth of the matter is, Winston, even in a reduced role, Ernie Hudson as Winston stood out, and you can't think of the four guys, without that. I mean, you would never think that to think of Winston as a second fiddle or anything like that. You know, like the lines that he has absolutely next. There's three lines. Who are you going to call? Ghostbusters, right? Like, yeah. That's the tagline. Then you've got, he slimed me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have, when someone asks you if you are a god, you say yes.
God, I love that line.
And that's the line that they used in Afterlife.
So, the real Ghostbusters cartoon. Winston was voiced by Arsenio Hall. The thing that I find hilarious and kind of gross at the same time is Ernie Hudson actually auditioned for cartoon Winston. Because, again, Ernie Hudson wasn't a huge name at this time. Wasn't very well known at all. And they knocked him back because they told him he didn't sound enough like Winston.
Listen, if you have ever seen the TV series on HBO, if you've ever seen Oz,
yep.
You know what a powerhouse actor Ernie Hudson can be.
Yeah.
You know, and I met him at Comic-Con. Wonderful guy. Just, he's so enthusiastic when he meets the fans and, you know, just a beautiful human being. So I love the Ghostbusters too. I love everything about them. I mean, I was a little bit older. So, I mean, yes, I had a t-shirt. There wasn't the same amount of marketing of product as there is now. So, I mean, I don't have tons and tons of stuff. I don't even have the original t-shirt because it would not fit me now. I wouldn't even be able to get it on my arm. I was such a skinny kid. Oh my God, skinny. But the thing of, like, just to be able to go to a movie theater and see at that point something new that you had not seen before, you have absolutely no expectations, and it is so good, you want to go see it again. It's an astounding thing.
That's the thing for me is Ghostbusters is one of, if not my chief comfort movie. If I'm feeling like crap, if I'm feeling down, I'm feeling depressed, I will put Ghostbusters on and just zone out to it. I have seen Ghostbusters, I don't even know how many times in my life, but a lot.
And, you know, between Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2, there just seemed to be time moved differently back in the 80s, I guess. There seemed to be a huge gap. It wasn't really that huge of a gap, but it seemed like it. And so when Ghostbusters 2 came out, it didn't have quite the same reaction. I actually saw it in Utah when I was there with my cousins. It didn't have quite the same reaction, but it was still good. And what I'm really kind of happy to see is that Ghostbusters 2 has come up with that same kind of reverence that Ghostbusters has.
So, and that's something I'll talk to. I literally don't know a world without Ghostbusters. It came out a few months before I was born, and I have literally grown up with it. I had all the toys growing up. I had the toy proton pack. Now I have a better toy proton pack. And when Ghostbusters 2 came out, I find that people were unnecessarily harsh when it came out.
Yeah.
Because in all honesty, and I find it with people who are basically your age and younger, that they do hold it in a certain level of regard. Not necessarily as high as the original Ghostbusters, but pretty damn high. And there's nothing wrong with the movie. It's actually a fairly tight little story. The performances are great, and it's funny.
Yeah, but I think I can say why. Any sequel is, with the exception of The Empire Strikes Back, is never as good as the original, you know? And so I think that they did a pretty good job of it. So I think that what one of the problems with Ghostbusters 2 is that the flavor was a little different.
It was. Now, and that's really the thing, because, like, even the score is completely different. Like, completely different, which is, I honestly, as I grew older and started paying attention to things like that, I thought that was a bit of an odd choice, mm-hmm. but whatever, that was their choice. And there are certain things about it that, like, making changes to the movie to kind of fit the flavor of the cartoon,
yeah,
I think kind of hurt it. Like, I love Slimer, but there was no necessity for Slimer to be in that movie.
Right.
Especially, like, not that he was in it a bunch, but not to have him, not to the extent that he was anyway.
I'm trying to remember, now that you bring up Slimer, did he show up in Afterlife?
No.
Yeah.
But he is showing up in Frozen Empire.
You know what, that's probably good, because I bet you there's a lot of people that saw Afterlife and went, where's Slimer? Because people love Slimer.
Yeah.
and I agree with you. Like, there was no need for him to be in 2. However, his role in 2 was actually pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that kind of brings us a little bit. I know we're talking very generally, but that kind of brings into the fact that I think that even with the all-female cast of Ghostbusters, Answer the Call, I think that everything has been fairly faithful and respective of the original.
Yeah.
There's always those things that are in there. But, I mean, they had the cameos of the original cast. It's almost like it's an alternate universe at this point.
Yeah.
You know? And I really enjoyed it on that level.
And you know what? It's actually really neat that you say that. There is an ongoing comic book series from IDW with the Ghostbusters. And the main series in the comic takes place in the same universe as the 2009 video game. But there is an episode where the Ghostbusters from all the different realities, including the Answer the Call reality, all converge together to take on a common enemy. Mm. So yeah, in the comic books at least, everything is an alternate universe, including that, which is, you know, cool.
Yeah, that is really cool. You know, and I really like where they're going with it. Although I still, guys, I don't know why. Every time they mention Frozen Empire, because this is like this whole Frozen thing, and every time I see that image of the big baddie showing up, I just hear the opening refrains to the Snow Miser song. And I don't know why. I can't shake that. I can't shake it. But Ghostbusters, let's just talk about what it means to people, because like it's been around for 40 years. For any property to be around as 40 years, that makes it really, when you think about it, it's as big as anything else. It's as big as Star Wars. It's as big as Star Trek. It's as big as Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
It is up there. It is a big franchise.
It endures.
Yeah.
So, and to me, Ghostbusters means a lot, because Ghostbusters is one of those films that I don't just enjoy it, but it informed a lot of who I am. Yeah, it informed my taste. It informed my humor.
Yeah, it endures from generation to generation.
Zipper, my kid Zipper, loves Ghostbusters as well.
Yeah.
What
is it about it that triggered that within you?
I mean, for me, I love practical effects.
Yeah.
And this movie is wrought with practical effects. It is, the ghosts are all puppets. They're all superimposed in. They're, the only thing that might be CGI even now, I think it's hand-drawn in, is the proton packs effects.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's, I love that. I love the characters. I love Ray Stantz. Ray Stantz is a fantastic character. He's very relatable. Even though he's a university professor, he's still an average dude who just has a love for the paranormal and technology.
And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up Ray, because it's one of those really interesting things that when we are reintroduced to the old guard in Afterlife and we find out what they've been doing, sort of, I mean, we don't really know what Venkman's, he's teaching. Venkman's still teaching, right?
Probably.
And you see that wonderful moment with him and Sigourney Weaver. They're doing the throwback to the, there's all of those wonderful Easter egg throwbacks to the original, right? Where he's doing the psychic test and it's like, how are you doing this? Like, you've marked the cards and all that. And she's just electrocuting him. He gets his comeuppance. I think that's a brilliant scene. Yeah. It's a nice little Easter egg, but it's a brilliant scene. So him, we know that he and Dana are doing great things and whatever. He's teaching. Ray's running an occult bookstore.
Ray's a cult.
It makes sense. But the big surprise is Winston is this multi-billionaire dude who's like running some massive corporation. And you're just like, and Janine's like, so they don't know, like, this is our secret. Is that how it's going? You know? Ray doesn't know that you're keeping his bookstore afloat. That's still a secret.
The 2012 Ninja Turtles cartoon had a moment where I just screamed because they actually mentioned Ray's occult by name. I'm just like, yes! I love that.
Yeah, it's interesting how properties now are just kind of interweaving with one another, you know? Like the I guess maybe the nerd kingdom has been jonesing for more multiverse mashing.
Going back to the comics, right? Like, I have, there's an IDW crossover between Ghostbusters and Ninja Turtles, which I have somewhere. And there's a crossover between Ghostbusters and Transformers as well, where they create the Transformer Ectotron.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, there's a whole bunch of different crossover stuff that's readily available for people to read.
I'll tell you the weird thing for me, what you mentioned about the Ghostbusters cartoon, the real Ghostbusters. It took me quite a while to wrap my brain around the fact that Lorenzo Music voices Peter Venkman. And I'm just like, so Garfield and Carlton the Doorman from Rhoda is also Peter Venkman.
So that's the thing I find absolutely hilarious, because Bill Murray voices this Garfield in the live action films.
I know, right? It's just, now, you just never know where Ghostbusters are going to pop up. But to this point in Afterlife, it's so interesting that they actually are bringing back the human villain who isn't really a villain but is a villain.
Oh, Peck, yeah.
Yeah. I just think that is so good, because Peck is still like, I'm going to get you, sucker.
But the thing is, like, and I know that he's built as the villain in the first one. But if you look at that objectively, dude was just doing his job.
It's interesting how, as you get older, you know, like, you are almost 40. Mm-hmm. You are in your 30s. I am 54.
Mm-hmm.
Pause for a minute. I'm 54.
Dude.
40 years ago. Anyway, seemed like yesterday. But the thing of it is like, you go back and you watch something like Ghostbusters, where as 14 years old, I'm like, that guy's a dick. Oh, my God.
No, he's not. He's dickless.
He's such a dick.
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
But I'm just like, he is, oh, and you hate him. And then, like, you know, like, you're 54 and you've had, like, leadership roles, and you're just like, Venkman is a dink, you know, like, why?
In so many ways.
Yeah, and the thing of it is that there's that sort of immaturity. So what is nice about this is that we do get an arc in Venkman that I'm starting to see where, you know, like, yeah, he's still got that sarcasm,
mm-hmm.
you know, where Gozer shows up at Afterlife and he's like, hey, did you miss me? I'm right here, baby, you know, that kind of stuff. So you still see Venkman, but you also see that maturity in him, you know, with him and Dana, where they're having a good time with the psychic cards. So it'd be interesting to see what his character is like in Frozen Empire.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. Honestly, I'm looking forward to seeing what all the characters are like, specifically Rey, because Rey, one of the things I love about Rey is that he has this childlike innocence to him.
It's his whole life. Ghosts are his whole life. The supernatural is his whole life.
Yeah. And I'm interested in seeing how Dan Aykroyd portrays this older Rey, because at the end of the day, Rey's going to be what, in his 70s at this point? And he's seen some stuff. He's dealt with stuff.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because like when we are reintroduced to Rey in Afterlife, there is that jadedness to him, you know, where when he gets that phone call from Phoebe, and he's like, he wants to almost hang up immediately because he's like, he's so sick and tired of the practical jokes and the teasing and all that kind of stuff. He knows what he saw. He knows it was real. It felt real. It wasn't schizophrenia. It wasn't a bad LSD trip. He knows he saw it, but there hasn't been any ghost activity in forever. And then we find out why, because there's that whole story. And it was brilliantly scripted, I feel, because obviously Harold Ramis had passed away and couldn't show up as Egon. So the fact that they sort of springboarded this on his death, of the character's death and Harold Ramis's death, I thought was wonderful. Because we there's this whole mystery now surrounding Egon and why he just grabbed everything and ran and said peace out and didn't have any kind of communication with his daughter, his grandchildren, or anything like that. He was the weird old dirt farmer. Yeah, because he's keeping Gozer at bay. He's keeping the world destroyers at bay and nobody knows it. It was a fantastic scripting. And so like you have all of that kind of problem that is done very compactly in that scene with Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
You know, where as the phone call ends, because, you know, time's up, sorry, kid, you're out of luck. And he's just, you see that quizzical look on his face, and you don't know what's going to happen. And then the boys show up and it's fantastic. Ren, to you, you had some notes that you wanted to bring up, and I can't wait for this.
Yeah, so actually, so I've been watching this TV show called Ghosts, and it's about like a house where...
I want to see that.
It's actually hilarious. Yeah. But it's a... two people come in, take over a house to make it an Airbnb, and there's ghosts that lives in it. Anyway.
I just found out that this existed.
Yeah, my mom's been watching it, and she told me about it, and I was like, this is great.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to stream it now from start to finish.
There's... without getting into it much of it, obviously, there's one character who knows what a TV and VCR is, who's a ghost. And he's like, okay, we're going to watch Ghostbusters. Because, like, he's trying to show everybody what these movies are because they have no idea.
So these ghosts are from different eras.
There's, like, one's from the 20s, one's from 1776, one's a Lenape native that used to live on the land. The other one's a Viking that used to be there.
Cool.
And then there's this guy who, like, I think he's from, like, the 80s or something, and there was a party there. So literally he's walking around with no pants on, and he died with no pants. It's great. So anyway, he's like, okay. And then I think there's another one. Oh, there's one from 70s, 60s. I don't know. Okay. He was a Boy Scout. But anyway. So he's like, we're going to watch Ghostbusters. So they watch Ghostbusters. And paraphrasing some of the lines, because I don't remember them exactly, but they watched it, and they're all sitting there, and they're like, this is horrible. Like, they're actually, like, busting ghosts. And he's like, it was not this bad when I watched it when I was alive. There's one that says Slimer's just trying to live his life and eat leftover like food in the hotel. Like, why are they giving him shit? Like, then other one's just like, yeah, the guy's just like sitting there as a ghost, and he's like, I like, this is horrible. I never actually saw it. It was funny at the time. They bring up some other things that have also recently been brought up about the characters, but for the most part, they're just like...
like why Venkman brings a sedative with him on a date?
Yep, yeah. But that's, yeah. So, but they bring up stuff like that too, but they're just like, they're just, what? Like, these ghosts are just trying to live their lives, except for obviously the big baddies, but it's just, it's funny because, like, the librarian's not really hurting anyone. She's just down there, like, doing her library thing. Leave her alone.
I'm going to defend the sedative thing.
Okay.
If I can, for a minute.
I am so curious.
Yeah.
I think it just depends on how you view it. Okay? If you're, like, viewing it with today's lens, putting it back then, it's problematic. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the character of Peter Venkman, I don't think he brought it with the intention of it being a date rape drug. I just think he's a doctor. He's probably doing drugs himself. You know, he probably brought it as a popper to have some fun with if you're into that kind mm-hmm. of thing. And I just think that it was just something that would be on his person yeah. pretty much all the time.
Or he found it in his pocket. Because I know I've heard of a lot of like nurses and people who like put things in their pockets and they're like, oh shit, I came home with like.
I have told this story
by an absolute accident.
I have told this story before and I'm going to tell it again because mm-hmm. it speaks to that point. When I was doing my PSW training, a nurse that was doing our training was a sexual health nurse here in town. I'm not going to name names.
Nope.
Her son was going to go out on a date and was waiting for the car.
Mm-hmm.
She was late.
Mm-hmm.
She had just got done talking about sex and sexuality and
oh, no.
and that with a group of young women. And part of it is demonstrating how to put a condom yep. on and so forth and so on. She goes. He's anxious, he wants to impress his date, grabs the keys, gets in the car, doesn't look, boom, off he goes.
Oh no.
Picks up his date, being the perfect gentleman, opens the passenger side door for his date. Before she gets in, as he opens it up, on the passenger side door, or seat, is a box full of
demonstration items.
Demonstration items that you would use to put the condom on.
Oh my God.
To show how that condom yep. goes on. Use your imagination because I don't want to say the actual word. Shall we just say there was a box mm-hmm. full of organs.
Gregory Peck.
Organs. There was a box full of Gregory Peck's. Yes, that's fine. Whatever. And so he quickly turns to his date and says, they're my mother's.
Yep.
And then he had to quickly explain that his mom is a health nurse and all this kind of stuff. So to your point.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens.
I've come home with Legos in my pocket from like the daycare yeah. work.
I don't feel that was the author's intention. Yeah. I don't feel like that's the character's intention.
I think that, in all honesty, it's a fun thing to discuss, but at the end of the day, it's just one of those things that's in the script. There's no intention behind it.
Yeah.
He just needed to have it. And he has it.
Yeah, it's convenience, really.
Like, yeah.
A lot of things happen in scripts that are just there for convenience.
Yeah.
And try not to put too much of a spin on it in one way or another. So, yeah. But, I mean, again, the 80s, people weren't thinking about that kind yep. of stuff, right?
Yeah. But
they do wind up together.
Yeah.
I mean, they wind up breaking up and then getting back together, and now
yeah.
apparently they are completely together for years. Oh, do you think Dana's son's going to be in Frozen Empire?
I don't know.
Oscar.
That would be cool.
Hmm. I never thought about that.
I'd like to see like grown-up Oscar having issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can you imagine being raised by Venkman and like some painting tried to like absorb
that you? Had to have some lasting effect, like a little bit of like ghost juice.
No.
I'm talking about like ghost juice left, yeah. and it's like, oh, every once in a while
that would be an interesting story.
I could see like every once in a while he has like flashbacks or something, and he's like, oh, it's that painting guy, like,
yeah,
because he started to take him over.
Yeah, another thing he probably has PTSD of and has dreams of is that weird little European guy working.
Peter McNichol.
He's amazing in that.
Youngish. Oh my God. I love that.
To this day, every time I see him in a movie, like we were watching Dracula,
Dead and Loving It,
and I was like, that guy looks kind of familiar. And then they said the actor's name, and I was like, huh? And, oh, it's the European guy from Ghostbusters. Oh yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah, Dana, maybe
he's
we
so
can get
creepy.
The coffee or something. To this day, though, I out of any horror movie, even I just that image of him dressed as the nanny flying through the air to the old
yeah.
buggy to
yep.
grab Oscar from the oh my God, it's just it's wonderful. And the only thing that kind of makes me sad about these Ghostbusters movies is because it's his choice. Clearly, he's retired, but we don't have Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
He made that choice to go handle, like, he's being a dad, and that's his life choice, and that's awesome.
Yeah. But it's just, I would like to have that character come back.
Yeah.
So, neat thing about Lewis Tully, when the movie started shooting, it wasn't Rick Moranis playing him.
It was John Candy.
It was John Candy. And for some reason, it gets weirder. For some reason, he decided to play Lewis Tully with a German accent. And I don't quote me on this, but I think it was Harold Ramis who said, dude, this isn't working. You need to go. And they brought Rick Moranis in.
You know what?
I don't think John Candy, I can't see him doing it.
The problem with the late John Candy, wonderful Canadian comedian and actor, the problem is that the roles that he has done, like in The Great Outdoors, working with Dan Aykroyd, the Polka King, you know, all those things, is that there's a lovability about him. And as Lewis Tully, that would have just been a creepability. Because the thing is, with Rick Moranis' version of Lewis Tully, he's just an awkward, nerdy little guy.
He's pathetic.
I don't want to say pathetic, but he's nebbish. He's harmless. Like, Dana's not afraid of him. She just doesn't want to deal with him.
Well, if you look at how he's set up as a character, he is set up to be pathetic to the point where he has a party and invites his clients as a tax write-off because nobody else is going to come to his party.
Yeah. The great thing about a party like this is you can write it off your taxes. If you buy aspirin in bulk, then you can... I mean, he just doesn't know that he is socially awkward. And that's what makes his arc in Ghostbusters 2 even richer, where it's like, clearly he and Janine were going to get together.
Yeah.
And just because Rick Moranis doesn't want to do things anyway, and I don't blame him. Last time he came out of retirement and did something, some dude randomly punched him in the face. It's like, hey, I'm going back. Bye.
Back into the hole. I'm out.
But, you know, it's just, I would like to have seen that character more because he is such a rich and important part of the first two movies.
Yeah, he is. And at the end of the day, Rick Moranis is a delight. Like, I don't think I've ever seen Rick Moranis do anything that I didn't like.
He's an unusual guy that became a big star, sort of playing these nebbish type of characters. But you think about the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids franchise.
Yeah.
Huge franchise in the 90s. Huge. He was a big name. They didn't come any bigger than that. And it's kind of an unusual thing to see somebody of that stature. And by stature, I just mean kind of like this nerdy little guy. And he was SCTV, Bob and Doug McKenzie, hilarious. Yep. Succeed like that. And then what?
Peace out.
Peace out. Yep. But good, you know what? Noble reasons, good for him. I love what our Canadian actors do sometimes to pepper their retirement. Like Dan Aykroyd and the vineyards, the wine. I'm just like...
The Skull Distillery, too.
Yeah. It's just like, it's Crystal fantastic. Skull. It is fantastic that they sit there and go, there's nothing more Canadian than that, I think, where you're just like, that's Hollywood. Yes, I'm part of Hollywood. I enjoy it, but in my heart, I'm Canadian, and I'm going to do this.
Now, before we get into this about Dan Aykroyd, there was something else that you wanted to go over, Ryan?
Oh, just lists of iconic lines that, like, there was only Ghostbusters. Like, we had nothing new until, technically, I guess, the...
Answer the Call.
Well, the 2016?
Yeah, 2016. Well, like, in the 90s, there was also the Extreme Ghostbusters cartoon.
Oh,
because everything in the 90s was extreme.
I never watched it.
Wait, there was an Extreme Ghostbusters cartoon? Yeah.
So, the idea behind the Extreme Ghostbusters was... It was Egon, but he's a little too long in the tooth to be dealing with the ghost. So he's teaching, and he brings on a bunch of his students as the new Ghostbusters.
Why have I never heard about this until this very moment?
I don't know. It was on TV in the 90s, so that might be why.
For how long?
Like a season, but that also means like a billion episodes, possibly.
I don't know.
Wow. But it was a direct sequel to the real Ghostbusters cartoon as opposed to a sequel to the movie.
Wow.
And yeah, like they had Marisa LaMarche back as Egon, and even the original, like they even had the original boys come back for an episode or two, and their voice actors came back, although it was Dave Coulier instead of Lorenzo Music, because Lorenzo Music had already passed at that point. Yeah. But
Wow. I thought I knew a lot, but I didn't know that.
And of course, Slimer was in it.
I am stunned. Yeah. Stunned. Ren, some of these.
Well, just quotes. Like lines that I grew up with. Yeah. I mean, I growing up with weird lines, but like the flowers are still standing when he pulls the tablecloth out.
And the flowers are still standing.
Any jokes about big Twinkies, human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. There is no Dana, only Zool. Yeah. He's obviously one of them. Or we're playing...
My favorite thing in that, remember when Coca-Cola had all the different names on the cups?
Yes, yeah.
Did you see that where they crossed it out?
Dana, only
had written Zool. There is no Dana, only Zool.
We were playing apples to apples one time for like a family, like we had a bunch of people over playing apples to apples, and the adjective was scary and the noun was fridge. And someone was like, well, how is a fridge scary? And my brother from the side of the table looks up and goes, Zool! And like, that was just freaking killed everybody.
Yeah. You know, I love the fact that Sigourney Weaver has Ripley for the Alien series and Dana for Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The fact that she is in both of these things, I love that for her because she seems to be a nice woman where I don't know how they did it. I don't know where they got the rights to do it. But for a school play, a high school did Alien.
Mm.
And she came to see it.
Oh, cool.
And she talked to the cast afterwards. I don't know how they did it, but it looked great. Let me tell you, it looked great.
Don't Cross the Streams.
Yeah.
It's used for so many different things, even if it's not like a stream in the reference.
Especially when men have to pee in a trough.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. Yeah. And one that always kills me whenever I hear it. Listen, do you smell something? When they're in the library.
Yeah.
Listen, do you smell something? It's like, oh, wait, okay, sure.
I love that librarian goes, shh. Yeah. And then like she's
one of the final bosses in the video game.
Oh, that's awesome.
I have a friend who's a mechanic. He has two go-to lines whenever the boss asks, hey, what's wrong with this car? One is the scene from The Mask, where the guy's like popping out of the hood and he starts listing off all the stuff wrong with the car. The other one is when Ray brings Ecto-1 into the shop and it's like, oh, we need this and the sparks and the brakes and this is shot and that's shot. He'll list all this stuff off and his one boss was like, what? And then he's like, no, it just needs like a quick brake change or something. And the boss like had a panic attack because he thought it was this huge list of stuff. So this guy can also quote we watched a whole marathon of just both movies back to back. He quoted the entire movie the entire way. And it was wonderful. It's hilarious.
It's
quotable.
It's, you know, like even when you think about those little scenes where they're buying the firehouse, right? And like,
guys, I love this.
And Spangler just
have you tried this bowl?
And I was like, this is great. And
I had to explain that, I think, to you one time. Was it? He comes down the pool and he's like, this is great. And then the salesman looks at them. Agent, yeah, the real estate agent looks at them and gives him a look.
Yeah, she gives him the look.
And it's like, well, clearly he's just, you know, shown his entire poker hand.
Yeah.
Like he says that it's great now, so they can no longer knock the price down at all. Yeah.
Yes.
That's what that reference. Because he completely
ruins the.
Because they're like, oh, well, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and this is wrong. And you can see them trying to knock numbers down.
And then as soon
as he comes down the pole, she's like, yeah, sorry, what was that?
And I think that that's kind of the neat thing about that original group, too, right? We all have friends like that. You've got the sarcastic one. You got the innocent one. You got the nerdy science one. You got the one that's like, I'm just going to ride with these guys. Yep. I'm the cool one. I'm trying I'm just trying to fit in here, you know.
But the most important thing that is always now a cultural reference is the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who doesn't at least know the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Now, they're a natural brand now, right?
They're a mock-up brand. Like they released them in conjunction with the last movie.
Right.
Okay.
Because I wondered about that.
Because I don't think it is. It just...
Yeah.
It was just something that they made up for the movie.
Right.
But now it's like... Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man is in the city.
And the truth of the matter is, like, the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man isn't even in the movie that much.
Nope.
But when you consider the fact that each movie has something like the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man, but none of them have ever compared to the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. Each movie has its own, like, okay.
Which is why they brought in the mini puffs. My God.
If you look at the first movie and the second movie, if you watch them side to side, front to back, like one half the other, they follow a very, very succinct pattern to each other.
Yeah.
So more so, Evolution, which was also written by Dan Aykroyd, follows that exact same pattern. It's actually really kind of neat watching it. Because, like, the part where they take down the burden or sing and play that funky music, White Boy, is the same part as the musical montages after their first success in part one and two.
You know, and the way that they brilliantly portray things or act things, I'm thinking specifically in Afterlife of the scene with Paul Rudd interacting with the little Stay Puffs. And then he sees the dog, right?
Yeah.
That's what we kind of call them. I know that
the terror dog.
The terror dog. And it's got its head buried in, like, dog chow or whatever. And he stands... Paul Rudd just has a way of evoking certain emotions. And then, like, he's gonna sort of slowly back away. And then a noise is made. And the terror dog is now aware of him and starts chasing him through and out of Walmart. And, guys, I cannot tell you how many times that has happened to me. But...
Oh, my God. I want to watch Afterlife again now.
But, I mean, it's just, I think that they have built a very, very marketable and rich world that appeals to multi-generations. And you don't get that very often.
So I just want to go back to Dan Aykroyd for a second. I was going to mention earlier. Dan Aykroyd loves the paranormal. And part of the reason for that is his dad was a paranormal investigator.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, because he's got that show on. I think it's on the History Channel now where it's like all these weird but true things. You know, like the guy that gets a pole through his head and lives.
Yeah.
And, like it's really, really cool. I would love to meet Dan
Aykroyd. I would have a conversation with him. Like he's like in my top five celebrities that I'd actually like to converse with.
Yeah, I don't like not just like meet at.
Prepared to just stare at them? Like, what's the other option?
Not just meet like at a Comic-Con, but to actually sit down and like have a drink and just talk about paranormal crap and like, I would be fascinated.
Yeah,
you know, just talk about everything because he seems to me like a very intelligent person.
I think there's a lot of Dan Aykroyd in Ray Stantz.
Yeah,
I think he's very much. As Ray Stantz playing not necessarily himself, but definitely a version of himself, because I've seen him on TV shows talk about paranormal and he gets that same energy and that same twinkle in his eye that Ray gets when he talks about the paranormal.
Yeah. Like when I think about, there's a couple of iconic roles that he has had. One was the Blues Brothers and one is The Great Outdoors playing Roman. I have a feeling though, that those characters are probably not at all like Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing is that Dan Aykroyd is really good at playing a smarmy jackass as well.
Couch trip.
But I don't think
he is. And I think that's the brilliance of his acting. Does he like the music from the Blues Brothers? Does he like that kind of aesthetic? Absolutely. Of course he does. Did he enjoy his friendship with the Belushis? I'm sure he did.
Mm-hmm.
But are those characters Dan Aykroyd? I don't think so. I think that he is he's a pretty down-to-earth guy. I'm only supposing here. And I think Bill Murray is to an extent too, but I think that there's a difference. I think that Bill Murray now is a little more grounded versus then. Ren is shaking her head.
Oh, Bill Murray.
I don't think so because I've heard of so many stories where Murray's just like, I'm just going to join into this party and crash it because I'm Bill Murray. I'm going to take your fries and nobody's going to believe you.
But that's what I mean though. I see him as being
he's
that.
Like, he's like a cryptid. He just shows up and
he's not a jerk. It's not just parties though. He does that with movies. Directors will send him scripts hoping that he'll join onto the movie. And in some cases, they don't know he's joined into the movie until the day they start shooting.
But that's my point. I think that Bill Murray is just out to have a good time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think that even though he's older, I think he's still just out to have a good time. So I don't really see, but I don't see him as that sardonic, sarcastic, you know, I don't think he would take somebody down that viciously in real.
Yeah.
I think that he would just, but I think that he would be very cerebral with you. And so I think you better come prepared if you're going to have a conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that that's kind of the difference. I think that if you're going to have a conversation with Bill Murray, you better be prepared.
Yeah.
If you're going to have a conversation with Dan Aykroyd, you're going to have a conversation with Dan Aykroyd.
Here's an open invitation to anyone that was in Ghostbusters. If you want to have a real conversation with us, please let us know.
Yeah, Murray,
that would be great.
We can crash Area 51 and a half anytime you want this theory.
My brother is part of the Glasgow Ghostbusters,
mm-hmm.
and they were actually invited to the UK premiere for the new movie, which is really cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of those around. Like, there's the Whovians, there's the... What's the Star Wars guys?
501st and the Rebel Legion. Yeah,
and then there's Ghostbusters.
There's the Trek people.
The Ghostbusters are always at every Comic Con around this area. Like, London's a big one. They're mm-hmm. always in London,
mm-hmm.
and they have like all this cool stuff. Oh my god!
I watch my brother's Facebook, him and his wife, and they are at cons basically every weekend. In con season, dressed as Ghostbusters. My brother wears a kilt as part of his getup.
Hey, you want to see my proton pack?
And he made his own Ecto-1. Like, he bought a hearse. Funny thing. The hearse originally had Batman Forever decals all over it because it has something to do with Batman Forever or something. But he got it. He stripped the decals, painted it white, put his own decals on it, put his own flourishes on it. It looks fantastic.
Why am I just now finding out that he has all this stuff? I need to meet this man.
As for us, we were not so lucky to be invited to the Toronto premiere. So we're going to check it out. It's this weekend. It comes out on the 22nd. I can't wait to see this in theater.
Yeah, we'll have to go, and I think it's going to be good. And on that note, it is all the time we have for this episode of Area 51 and a Half. Nick, remind our aliens once more how they can get a hold of us.
You can find us on our social media outlets, at the Area 51H, TikTok, Instagram, Threads, the whole bit. You can also find us on Facebook and YouTube by searching for Area 51 and a Half. Don't forget to check out our Patreon for all sorts of exclusive goodies and a shout out during our podcast. And also make sure to take part in our survey. Let us know how we're doing. We're looking for your honest and constructive feedback. The link will be in the write-up for the show.
Thank you for joining us on the landing pad, aliens. This is Spooky Uncle John and
Snyderman 501 Nick Snyder.
Red, aka Pyro Lily.
Signing off from Area 51 and a Half.
So the first thing I'm going to bring up this week is my... Okay, I'll do that again, because I don't know what just happened.
What the hell? That was my elbow.
Oh!
That was your elbow?
Yeah.
That crack was your elbow?
Your elbow made that noise.
Yeah. Welcome to life over 30. Everything snap, crackles, and pops from here on in, kiddo.
I'm falling apart.